Are you feeling a bit meh about life? Are you a bit underwhelmed? A bit blah about everything? It turns out there's actually a medical name for it. Feeling blah is actually called anhedonia, right? It's a modern life. It is just making this more common, apparently. Well, I don't know much about it, but here to explain why and what you can do about it is Tanith Carey, author of Feeling Blah, Why Anhedonia Has Left You Joyless and How to Recapture Life's Highs. Tanith, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for doing this. How did you discover that there was a real life medical diagnosis called anhedonia? How did you discover that?
Well, like a lot of people, I was like doing all the things I was supposed to do that was supposed to make me happy. You know, I had a lovely husband, I had two lovely children, I had a nice house, I had a stimulating career. And then one day I got this call from my agent about a book deal I really wanted. And I can remember hearing myself going, oh, that's great, that's fantastic, wonderful. But when I put the phone down, I noticed that there was actually no real joy kind of coursing through me. And after that, I began to wonder, well, what is it? What is this condition? And I just kind of thought, well, other people must be feeling this. And for a long time, I kind of thought about it. I noticed it in other situations, you know, like at parties, I'd always, like everyone else seemed to be having a good time, but I kind of felt on the outside. I mean, I loved Christmas, but I just couldn't really kind of access the joy. And then one night, I was Googling it. And I think that if we feel in this state, we often don't talk about it because we think, okay, well, I'm not depressed, I'm functioning, I'm okay, lots of people have it much worse than me, this is going to sound really ungrateful. But like when my husband was lying next to me, I Googled it and I said, well, why aren't I enjoying my life? And up popped, you know, loads and loads of pieces by sort of psychiatrists and psychologists talking about the state of anhedonia. And anhedonia, like, it is a symptom of major depression, but it can, the research is now showing that it can be a standalone state. And I found there was this huge amount of research that none of us were having access to, even though many of us are living in this kind of gray space in the middle. Like, we're not, like, we're not depressed, we're not despairing, but we're not hyper happy either. But why aren't we talking about this kind of gray space in the middle?
Well, I suppose it's virtually impossible to be joyful all the time. So, you know, it's a very, very strange one. I mean, so let's start with signs that you might have this. What would the signs be?
Well, it would be like you couldn't, it's emotional flatlining. So you may not even be able to cry as much. You might just feel numb. Mm-hmm. You might feel basically just, you don't have access to your emotions. You know, you feel very kind of burnt out. You feel kind of just kind of like zombie-like, like you are going through the motions in your life. You're not actually a part of your life. It's like you're looking at your life through a pane of frosted glass. And, you know, I think people think, oh, okay, well, this is just a very nebulous state. But when you look at the research, you find that there's loads of different ways that our main brain's reward system, which is the mesolimbic pathway, can be interrupted by modern life. And the research is showing that there is all sorts of things that we're doing in modern life, like our diets are not helping. Mm-hmm. That's causing a lot of inflammation. The inflammation can also interrupt the smooth running of dopamine around the reward systems. Obviously, we tend to be overworked. So we tend to have a cortisol overload. And cortisol is a stress hormone that stays in our bodies far longer than, you know, dopamine spikes we might get from just having a kind of a laugh or getting something we want. So because that cortisol never gets a chance to reset, it basically dampens our feel-good hormones, so that most of the time we're just feeling in a state of kind of zombie-like kind of just survival. And that's what I was trying to access here. And I mean, there are so many ways that we can reduce the load. But I think that, you know, I think modern life is stressful. Mm-hmm. We tend to think, oh, okay, that, you know, but we tend to have this idea that modern life is going to make us happy. When in fact, modern life is making happiness more difficult. So the point of the book is actually that we have to kind of accept that and actually make a little bit more effort to kind of counteract what's happening to our brains as a result of modern life. And the good news is that thanks to some MRI scanning, we can actually see how emotions are made in the brain, and we can access this and use it and harness it to push back. And that's one of my points in the book.
Okay. Is this pretty common? I mean, when you're doing this research, do you think a majority or a minority of people are suffering this? I mean, how common do you reckon it is out there?
Well, I mean, it's difficult to quantify because obviously we're only just identifying it. But I mean, in surveys of people who feel like they are languishing, which is a similar kind of experience, then we have find that sort of something from millennials, there have been surveys that have found like 30% of millennials, Gen Z 26%, baby boomers 14%. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not like it's kind of it's a strata of people, I think, who are accepting meh as the status quo.
Yeah, I get it. And I'm sure you're resonating with so many people listening to this. I mean, people are going, I feel exactly that. Is there a correlation here with burnout?
There's absolutely, yeah, there is, because burnout is one of the main contributing factors to blah. Because at that point, the cortisol system just basically overloads. As I said, the any attempt by the, you know, the serotonin, dopamine to sort of circulate, because cortisol wins out. Because if you think about our survival, like, you see, the human brain is not designed to make us happy. It's designed to help us survive. And I think that's what we've forgotten. And, you know, we get the same hit of cortisol as we do when we get a boss, sort of an email from our boss saying, you know, you haven't done that piece of work, as we did when we were being chased by mountain lions. You know, in our caveman days. So, you know, the human brain doesn't discriminate. But, you know, when we have cortisol hits the whole time from the news, social media, work deadlines, just basically, and also, you know, we're on dopamine overload as well, aren't we? So, you know, we live in a convenient society where we are designed to get our needs met the whole time. So that means that when everything feels good, is supposed to feel good, nothing feels good. So we have that as well. Like,
Okay. I hear you now. I hear you. Somebody just texted me in, which is interesting, Tanya. Somebody said, is that not just being an adult? We've got a lot of texts like that. And it just shows that people actually, they seem to expect to feel like this as an adult.
Yeah, what a shame we're expecting to feel just like blah as a status quo. I mean, you know, we are facing a lot of challenges on this earth, and we have to be ready to meet them. And if we're feeling blah, you know, we're not reaching our potential, we're not, you know, I totally accept your point. We can't feel joyful all the time. But if blah is the way we are most of the time, what example are we setting to the next generation? Mm-hmm. What example are we sending to our children? I mean, mental health is in free fall, I mean, across the first world. We have to find a way to turn this around. And the thing about blah is it's a precursor to depression. It can be the waiting room to depression. So if you are not functioning well, if you are not enjoying your life, if you feel a lack of motivation, which is also part of anhedonia, so you stop doing the things that make you feel good, then once something really does hit, you're not in a good position. So we need to kind of in those times, okay, blah, okay, nothing terrible is happening to you. Life's ticking along, you're surviving. But we have to find ways. I mean, I think what's really interesting is we always talk about, oh, okay, we want to be happy. But if you ask the average person, no one really knows how happiness is made in our brains. So we have to know that. And that's what I address in the book. I talk to some of the world's top neuroscientists to find out.
I love this. I love the fact that it's not just, I mean, you do talk about the physiological side and the science part of it, you know, which is fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. So how can we expect to be happy if we don't know how joy is made in our brains? Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. We have to start getting on top of this because, you know, I mean, every generation since the 50s has got less happy. It's time to turn this around. And the only way we can do that is to harness the science, harness the neuroscience, visualize what's happening in our brains. I mean, obviously, the brain is a highly complex organ. I'm kind of oversimplifying it. But if we understand how it works better, we can start using it to our advantage more than like letting it control us and just thinking, okay, we just have to accept what happens to us. You know, we have to change the inputs we are feeding into our brain in order to sort of turn the dials up on the good feelings and the good neurotransmitters and turn the dial down on the things that are countering that. So, to get the levels right. The levels are not right at the moment. That's what's happening.
Yeah, on the majority, I would say. You've had a look at some of the lifestyles of the world's reported happiest people and what they do. What have they all got in common then?
I would say, and the Greeks got this right, is a life of meaning. Now, that sounds very, you know, they know they have a purpose. Mm. And the other thing I find is that people who are enjoying their life, they know what their spark is. So a spark is something that all of us have, and you can often see it in childhood. And it's maybe like being good at listening to people, being good at caring for animals, maybe art, music, you know, expressing yourself in words. But every child has something, and it's, you can see it in the way they play when they're little, when you don't interrupt. What are they drawn to? And I think often in this very busy world, we kind of tend to put that aside, even though that is what nourishes us and puts us in a state of flow and gets our feel-good chemicals going. So I would say to anybody, just make sure that you are indulging your spark, no matter how busy you are. Making a date with yourself to do that is really important. And also, you know, just have a look at have a think about why you're here, what's important to you, how do you want to make the world a better place? Because, you know, we can have frivolous fun, but I think it's more meaningful if it has a reason and we know why we're here.
Can I just bring it back to you for a second? Because you said when you got that book deal and you said, oh, yeah, that's on the phone. You're like, yeah, that's fantastic. That's amazing. But you didn't feel any real joy. Is there anything you did in your life to counteract that or to help that? Because obviously you're on the phone now talking to me about a book. So what did you change in your life once you recognized that this was not a way you wanted to be feeling?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, I always say I've written 14 books now, so I write what I need to learn. So when I wrote my book about anhedonia, I was my own test experiment. So I looked at all the research. The last third of the book is an evidence-based toolkit for what you can do, because obviously different things work for different people. But I have looked at what works and what makes me happier, and I put it into action. And there are things like I do all walks, which is basically that's kind of a value-added walk in nature, where you don't just wander through on your phone. You actually look out for the kind of the details that, you know, that put your life in perspective. I mean, me and my husband, we often go out with an app that shows the constellations in the sky. You can see your life in perspective. And that just gives you an incredible sense of meaning and joy and perspective. The other thing I have discovered is that apparently 2 hours of free time a day is the optimal time that happy people have to themselves.
So free time, what's that now? To explain free time.
Free time where you are not obliged to do anything and you can do what you like with it. So, you know, therefore we all have the same amount of time in the day. So we have to prioritize things. So it's starting to prioritize time for me in which I can do the things that make me feel good instead of just surviving and just putting I think as women as well, we tend to kind of meet everybody else's needs first. So I have been a little bit more boundaries. I use my out of office email more. You know, I guard my time. I mean, time is incredibly precious to us, isn't it? And I look at my diet. I make sure that I don't eat a lot of inflammatory foods, which might interrupt the smooth running of my reward system. I exercise. I mean, I know, don't we all know that exercise is supposed to be good? But when you look at the science, it works better than antidepressants to get those feel-good chemicals working again. So it's like a toolbox. I mean, it's not just one single answer. There's lots of different things. There's also behavioral activation, in which you do a little bit of the spark that I talked about every day until the good feelings return. So, yeah, there's a massive range of things. But, we have to kind of, crystallize what works for us and then put it together.
It seems we've been, producer Kate, it seems like we've been talking about this kind of stuff on the show more and more. I think there's a real need and people are feeling a bit lost. And we kind of know, don't we, what to do. We know that exercise is good. We know that nature is good for us. But we're so unbelievably addicted to our phones and social media and work, which is neuroscientific as well, because it does give us that cortisol and that, you know, endorphins as well that we crave. But we can rewire. You do talk about that in the book. I mean, it is possible to rewire. It just takes time. A lot of texts coming in, Tan, that just give you another text, which is resonating with this conversation so much. Been feeling worse and worse since moving here 3 years ago, and I thought it was just me being jaded. But perhaps there's more to it. Thank you so much for putting this out there. I just want to say it's a really fascinating book, fascinating stuff, and I think maybe we've all lost sense of this everyday toolbox that we should be focusing on. I mean, 2 hours of free time, did you call it?
Yeah.
That's
tricky,
what I'm gonna,
I know.
But it's tricky, but you're right.
But you deserve it.
I know I do. But we all have the same amount of time. We just have to make time for ourselves, I suppose, and find out what really gives us that spark. Tan, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you.
With not only the book, but with joy in your life on an everyday basis. I hope that that keeps going, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
That would be lovely.
Thanks. Bye, bye, bye. There we go. If you want to pick up this book, if you are feeling a bit meh about life, it's really interesting stuff. I know we talked a lot there, but there's a lot of science to it, which is fascinating. It's called Feeling Blah, Why Anhedonia Has Left You Joyless and How to Recapture Life's Highs. It's by Tanith Carey and it's available now. Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.